Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a man whose nemesis is Commander Krill. Here is the captain.
Well, my new nemesis is P. Diddy. It's good to be seen and good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
This week, we are thrilled to be featuring Seven Cities by Smart Mouth Brewing Company in Norfolk, Virginia. Seven Cities is a lager named for the seven cities that make up the vibrant seven cities that make up the coastal Virginia. 4.4% ABV garage grade, 3.5 bottle caps out of 5. And how about a little thanks and cheers to the beautiful people? First up, a long distance cheers to Caitlin Knight listening in London, UK.
Yeah, and a big We Like Your Jib goes out to Tammy and her father in Cincinnati, Ohio.
OHIO. Here's a cheers to Amanda from Westminster, Maryland.
And a big shout out to Cole in Upper Sackville. You heard that right. Sackville, Nova Scotia.
Next up, a big cheers to Bird Dog in Washington, D.C. And last but certainly not least, we have Alice and R in Buffalo, who says tall cans in the air, and we could not agree more. So tall cans in the air to everyone who contributed to the beer fund.
Yeah, BWERUN, Beer Run. Just found out the other day you can actually sign up on Patreon for free. Now, you don't get to listen to the off the record episodes, but when we make posts there, you can see those. So if you're following us on social media and you're tired of not seeing some of our posts because of the algorithm monsters, then you can follow us on Patreon and also sign up for off the record on Apple subscriptions. Just open up your podcast app and hit subscribe, and that's enough of the business.
All right, everybody, gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime. Late last year, I received correspondence from someone wanting to learn more information about a case in which they had some ties to the victim. Here is a portion of that communication. Carol Ann Molnar was murdered in 1983, and it tore the Molnar family apart. Her mother died soon after her body was found, and her father later passed away without any answers as to what happened to his little girl. Her sister and extended family have yet to get justice. Even though I was quite young at the time, I can still remember her picture, a young, beautiful woman in her military uniform, displayed prominently in Carol Ann's grandmother's house. The only information I have about her murder is that it is still unsolved. She was in the military in Norfolk, Virginia, and one night she went missing. She was found sometime later in the seawall on the naval base. I believe she was found to be strangled and raped, but the family never spoke much about the details. From my research, I have found that there are several theories. Please look into this case. Thanks in advance for your time and help. This is a look at the still unsolved murder of U.S. Navy Petty Officer Carol Ann Molnar, and this is True Crime Garage. Carol Ann Molnar grew up in a loving household in Western New York. Carol Ann was born September 1961 to proud parents Joseph and Carol Molnar. About 2 years later, she got a little sister. Life was pretty normal growing up in a family of four. Carol Ann was beautiful, smart, and driven. She signed up for the U.S. Navy, and so off to both school and service she went. In 1983, she was 21 years old, living with a roommate on Chesapeake Boulevard in Norfolk, Virginia. Norfolk is a waterfront city in southeastern Virginia. It's home to Naval Station Norfolk, a massive naval base on Chesapeake Bay. Unfortunately, this general area has been the location of several True Crime Garage episodes. Most recently are Apex Predator episodes. Regardless of crime stories that we have covered from this locale, it is a beautiful area that holds significant importance to this greatest of nations. Carol Ann was ambitious and hardworking. A yeoman third-class petty officer working as a mail clerk for the Navy during the day, but moonlighting as a go-go dancer under the name Christy on the weekends. This is going to take us to Friday night, February 5th, 1983. Carol Ann was one of the girls dancing at the Galleon Club, where at closing time, she was said to be heading home, where she lives with her roommate, Deborah Stutsky, at 8648 Chesapeake Boulevard. Okay, so let's break this down a little further. Carol is reported to have left the Galleon Club at 3 a.m. So now we are technically Saturday, February 6th, in the wee hours of the morning. Her roommate says on that Saturday that Carol Ann never made it home that morning. Captain, we are only talking about a 10 to maybe 15 minute drive from the club to the home, and 15 minutes is stretching it out quite a bit.
Right.
So she lives not far from Virginia Beach. This club was right on Virginia Beach. So not a far drive, and unfortunately, this young woman does not make it home. The only good news here is that the alarm is raised immediately, and we get some good information. Her roommate, Deborah Stutsky, has Carol's back. They're good friends, not just roommates. Deborah calls the local police. She reports her friend missing that very morning. She tells them to take the report seriously, as Carol Ann would have either called the night before or at the very least called in the morning if she expected not to be home.
Her roommate reports her missing, tells law enforcement, hey, take this serious, but also I can give you a description of what she was wearing that day.
She tells the cops that the night before, when going off to work, Carol Ann was wearing a full-length black leather coat, a pink sweater, Jordache jeans, and black high heels. The bolo, Be On The Lookout, that hits the police scanners states provides a description to the beat cops saying Carol Ann Molinar is 5 feet tall, weighing 95 pounds, with blue eyes and shoulder-length curly hair. So we get the outfit description from the roommate, and we also get the physical description of our missing person that is hitting the police scanners early on that Saturday morning. So the call to action has been made, and action is being taken to look for this young woman, 21 years old. So that's a good description and fast action. But unfortunately, on that Saturday, she never comes home. She didn't return after work. The day comes and goes. She never returns. Right. Then on that Sunday, she still does not turn up. Now the alert level will go from burrito to burrito supreme real quick. This is when Carol Ann fails to show up for her regularly scheduled assignment that Monday. So this is February 8th. Remember, she is working for the Navy. That's a pretty strict assignment, pretty strict job. Her commanding officer jumps into action that Monday morning.
Well, look, you have to be very serious when you own or operate a boat.
Carol Ann had worked at the staff college assignment for over a year. And according to the commanding officer, she was a dedicated worker. She didn't miss days and was rarely late. Al Whitley, back then, was the spokesman for the staff college. He said that the Navy suspected foul play when Miss Molnar did not return to her apartment to collect, quote, so much as a toothbrush, end quote. The Navy did their due diligence, obviously. They checked in with the roommate. They checked her apartment and calling Carol Ann's parents before going public. Carol Ann's parents, who lived near Buffalo, New York, had not heard from their daughter since prior to her disappearance. So we get the Navy calling this foul play right from Jump Street here, Captain.
Yeah, which is abnormal because normally law enforcement goes, we're just going to assume that she ran away.
Right. And what we have here is we're going to have the Navy will be directing most of this investigation. So never having been in the Navy, I'm taking a little bit of a guess here. My guess, Captain, would be our first action is to make sure that she's just not simply AWOL.
Right.
Do we have any evidence to suggest that she just took off? If she were to take off, it would seem likely maybe she would go home. And so that would be protocol. Check with her parents. You've checked with her roommate. And when I say check her apartment, I think they actually went to the apartment and did a walk around.
Right.
And so we have now made, we've collected enough evidence to suggest to us before we go public with this that she's not simply just missing or absent without official leave. She is missing, and we think that there's some foul play involved here.
Now, did anybody tell the Navy about her dancing?
That I don't know, but I don't think it was much of a secret.
Right.
This was something that she was doing for a while, and I don't know the particulars of that part-time job, other than she was working that part-time and had done so for some time. The go-go dancer title is maybe one that some people are not super familiar with, but in a lot of cases, what that tends to mean is that you're not like an exotic dancer. You're not dancing up on stage. A lot of times that means that you are part of a collective that's showing up at these clubs and you're dressing provocatively and you're up and dancing. It's to kind of get the party going at these clubs, get people right to stay there a longer period of time, get people up on the dance floor themselves. While I don't know the particulars of her part-time gig, the title was go-go dancer. And I do know that she would work at this club, but it was, seems to be like it was part of a circuit, you know, Captain, in your band playing days, how you play one bar club and then the next Saturday you hit this other one and the next Saturday you hit this other one. Same thing for Carol Ann. She had, I believe it was three Virginia Beach clubs that she would regularly go to and work as a go-go dancer on the weekend. As said, she's had the same assignment for a year and her commanding officer saying she doesn't miss days. So we have something going on here that is obvious to persons that know her that are willing to step up and say, look, we suspect foul play. This is something serious. We all need to be on the lookout for this young lady. Now, later we get an update. This is from the Norfolk police sergeant who said that Carol Ann Molnar's green station wagon was found about 10 days after she was reported missing.
Well, like we always say, it's easier to find a car than it is to find a person.
The car was found not far from the club where she was working that night when she was last seen.
Right.
The sergeant said, quote, there is a very good possibility that foul play is involved, end quote. And we've been handling it as if a homicide has occurred, adding that search parties have been organized to look in the area where Carol Ann Molnar's car was found.
Well, and just to be Captain Obvious Dum-Dum Pants, just so I'm clear, the Navy is the one heading up the investigation, but they're still working with local law enforcement.
Well, yeah, so what you're going to have here, Captain, you're going to see two things taking place, and we're going to see, if you want to call it an investigation, we're going to see the investigation shift rather quickly on our timeline here in just a second. But what you have is she's originally reported missing to the local authorities via her roommate that Saturday.
Right.
And then she becomes officially missing to the Navy when she doesn't show up the next time she's supposed to
report for duty. So you have two agencies, if you will, working on locating this young woman. They find her vehicle. That's not a good sign. And now we have the events of May 1st, 1983. We get bad news. So this would be a little more than 50 days after Carol Ann was last seen. Remember, she was leaving the Galleon Club. Her body is located. They find her body. And here's the news report out of Norfolk, Virginia. And it reads, "The badly decomposed body of a missing Buffalo servicewoman has been found partially buried under the rocks of a seawall at the Norfolk Naval Air Station. Carol Ann Molnar, age 21, a Buffalo area native and a Navy Petty Officer Third Class assigned to the Armed Forces Staff College, was last seen at 3 a.m. at a Norfolk nightclub. City and Navy law enforcement agencies are investigating the case. Miss Molnar's fully clothed body was found about 8 miles from the nightclub and from the spot where her car was found 10 days after her disappearance." It goes on to state that she had worked part-time as a go-go dancer in Norfolk area clubs in her off-duty hours, and her father, Joseph, said his daughter occasionally expressed fears about the Norfolk neighborhood where she lived.
Can you say again how far away she was found from her car?
This is where it's a little complicated. But I think what they are suggesting here, because I don't have the address or a great description of where her car is found.
Right.
But what they're saying is her body was located and found 8 miles from the nightclub where she worked and from the spot where her car was found. So unless she's found equidistant to both and they're on polar opposites, I think what they're suggesting here, and this is what I found in later reports too, right. I mean, reports that came out the following year and the year after that, that her car was, it's a little surprising to me that it took 10 days to locate it, because the descriptions we get is that her car was found relatively close to where she was working that night.
Right. But not obviously in the parking lot or anything.
Correct. That is correct, because we have 10 days that expire before the car, and then it's, as said, a little more than 50 days between the time she's reported missing and then her body is found. Now, this she's found, as this report states, at the Norfolk Naval Air Station.
Right, which to me, it leans towards the idea that it's somebody that works at the naval base.
Yeah, and I think that the information here, we need to kind of cross-reference it with what other sources we can find. So we did end up getting access to the death certificate in this case. Autopsy report, well, we weren't that lucky, but we did get the death certificate, which does have some information, some slightly different information from the report that we just gave. So according to this report, she was found at 10:30 p.m. May 1st, 1983. So that's just further information. We already know found May 1st, but this is telling us she's found at night at 10:30 p.m. We have cause of death listed here as manual strangulation, with the location of the body found listed as Rock Barrier Seawall at NAS, Norfolk. Let's go back to the previous report where they are saying the Navy Air Station. So I'm guessing here on the death certificate that NAS Norfolk is standing for Navy Air Station Norfolk. It goes on to state, strangled by another person, body found in crevice of rock seawall. Now, I have got to say, Captain, that I found in crevice of rock seawall sounds that this could be a little different to me than the previous description. And maybe I'm just wrong, but the previous description, they use the word buried. When I hear and read the words found in crevice of rock seawall,
seems like she's placed.
Placed or may have been in the water kind of floating a little bit too. So we don't get a great description on how she was found or who she was found or who found her. What I have learned in our research of this case is that the person that found her has never been considered a suspect, meaning not that they didn't take the time to think and go, well, maybe we should consider this person a suspect. Right. There's reason not to consider them a suspect, right. You know, for anybody that was wondering.
Hey, guys, I found a body in this crevice over here. Hey, thanks for telling us. Be on your way.
Well, and we can get into the reasons why that may be for the person that found her here in a bit. But before that, unfortunately, we have to get to another victim. Now, shortly after Carol Ann Molnar's body is found, and in the early stages of the investigation, when it failed to yield any publicly known suspects, it was only natural that persons on base, off base, and with law enforcement were going to start to draw parallels to a murder that took place just about 1 year before that was still unsolved when Carol Ann was killed.
Right.
We're talking about the murder of another Norfolk Navy woman, and her name was Pamela Ann Kimber. It was almost the perfect crime. Everyone was distracted, their attention elsewhere. Stacks of cold hard cash sitting on the table unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal a pile of Monopoly money from the banker? Monopoly is one of those games that can bring out everyone's most devious selves. And Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic game that you can play throughout your day, anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties. Bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vault. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Download it now free on the App Store or Google Play. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options and more than 60 add-ons every week. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. Factor's ready-to-eat meals are on the table in 2 minutes. Eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Simply heat and savor the good stuff. Customize your weekly meals with as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Factor is your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. They're celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look out for the Earth Day Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. I am always on the go. I'm rather busy. And grabbing a quick meal for me used to mean eating the bad stuff. But I've switched to Factor. Now I simply grab a Factor meal from my refrigerator, heat, and then I am enjoying a delicious meal in just 2 minutes. And it's not loaded with the bad stuff. Head to factormeals.com/truecrimegarage50 and use code truecrimegarage50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code truecrimegarage50 at factormeals.com/truecrimegarage50. 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Springtime is all about fresh air, fresh starts, and freshly cleaned homes. And it's the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe Home Security.
Trusted by experts, SimpliSafe was named Best Home Security Systems for 2024 by U.S. News and World Report, and Newsweek awarded it Best Customer Service in Home Security. The system blankets your whole home in protection. It has sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more, plus a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras to keep watch over your property day and night. It's backed by 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day, so you get fast emergency response and dispatch when you need it most. With no contract and a 60-day money-back guarantee, you can try SimpliSafe risk-free. Don't absolutely love it? Send the system back for a full refund. Springtime means flowers blooming, birds chirping, getting back outside and having a good time. And you need to be safe, and your property needs to be safe, whether you are at home or out. SimpliSafe has given many listeners real peace of mind. You should have it too. Get 20% off any new SimpliSafe system when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring. Just visit simplisafe.com/garage. That's simplisafe.com/garage. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
All right, we are back. Cheers, mates. Talk hands in the air, and cheers to the people in the back.
Cheers to the people in the back. Now, Captain, before we went to what's
sorry,
up?
I'm just I've been laughing about that all week. I've always thought it was funny because we can't see the people in the back, but for some reason it's been really cracking me up this week, and I just keep on saying and. Thank you to the people in the back.
The garage listeners likely do not know the number of inside jokes that are going on during the housekeeping portions of the show.
Yeah, you got to listen to every episode to get them all.
Cheers to the people in the back is an old one from our young days when we were heavy metal guys, and you'd be on stage and you couldn't see past the third face in the row.
Yeah.
There was no seeing anybody in the back, and likely there was nobody back there. So yeah. Cheers to the empty room.
Cheers to the people in the back.
When we left off, Captain, we introduced another victim here, unfortunately, who was killed the year before Carol Ann Molnar was. And this victim, again, another Norfolk Navy woman. Her name is Pamela Ann Kimbrough. I think what's going to happen here, Captain, I think that listeners will recognize immediately that there are similarities in both the victimology and the details of the crimes themselves from the report. And we will try to offer up a little speculation along the way. This is a summary from the Norfolk AP report. A Navy woman whose body was found bound in the back seat of her submerged car apparently was choked unconscious and drowned when her car rolled off a seaplane ramp at the Norfolk Naval Air Station, the Navy said. See, there you go. NAS, again, Naval Air Station. So this is, while it's a larger area, this is a very specific area.
Yeah, but this is also why when they had another missing female, they said, hey, we're looking into this case immediately, thinking that foul play happened because of this case.
Medical examiners ruled the official cause of death as drowning, but there were bruises on her body and signs that an attempt was made to strangle her, according to Lieutenant Commander John Alexander. He's a spokesman for the base. The body of Pamela Ann Kimbrough, a radio man seaman stationed at the air station, was found about 2 p.m. Friday, March 26, 1982. So if we're looking at the time that Carol Ann Molnar goes missing, she went missing February 6th. So we're talking roughly about 11 months difference between the time that Pamela Ann Kimbrough was killed and then Carol Ann Molnar goes missing. Pamela Ann's case is a little bit different, though, because the timeline is much more precise. That will be helpful to the investigation. So what we do know, Captain, is that Pamela Ann Kimbrew, she was last seen alive at about 4 a.m. Thursday, March 25th. And we know that her body was found at 2 p.m. Friday, March 26th. So we're talking about a little more than 24 hours from the time that she's last seen alive till when she's discovered in the backseat of her car, which is submerged into water.
Right.
The details of when she was last seen are helpful, too. So she was last seen when she left her office to pick up messages at a communication center. Miss Kimbrew was a native of Bay City, Michigan, and had been in the Navy for a little more than 2 years by this point. So here, another victim. Unfortunately, Pamela was drowned after an attempt to strangle her. Carol Ann was strangled, both in water, or to be specific in Carol's case, in the seawall. Now, Captain, one thing that will be of great importance for the investigation or investigations is that because both victims are in the Navy and found on base,
right,
we have NIS working these cases. What this is going to mean is much less information making its way to the media and news outlets, specifically in regards to details about the crimes committed, how they were carried out, and information that you and I would like to review about the crime scenes.
So similar of victims, roughly the same age, same sex, same manner of death, and also same placement of the body after death. I wonder if this individual was trying to use the water to get rid of evidence.
I think you're right. I think it's both. Get rid of evidence and try to conceal the body either permanently or as long as possible.
Right.
And when we say that we would like to review some information and details about the crime scenes, a note here for new garage people out there, each murder has at least two crime scenes in this case, in these stories that we're talking about, as far as I can tell, and possibly three. So here we have where the attack and the abduction first took place. That's one crime scene. Carol's car and where it was found would be another crime scene. And then the location where her body is found is the third crime scene. Pamela Ann's case, likely two crime scenes. But all of those areas need to be investigated, looked for evidence, and talk to everybody that you can to see if there's any eyewitnesses or ear witnesses at any of those locations.
Right.
To these investigators, this is them investigating the murder of one of their own. So remember, this is NIS.
Well, two of their own.
Correct. Correct. But for terminology here, this is an investigator investigating the murder of one of their own. So think of a homicide investigation where you have police investigating the murder of a fellow police officer. So what you would expect in a situation like this, in an investigation like this, you're going to expect it to be intense, hyper-focused, and because of the agency working these cases, the Navy, you think that likely you're going to have a wealth of resources here for your investigation.
Well, it's going to be all hands on deck, literally.
Exactly. Now, I'm going to say something here with no intent to upset the old apple cart.
Oh, God.
And the very truth of this is, of course, that there should be no murder victims at all. If we lived in a perfect world, there would be no true crime garage show to listen to, but we don't, and there is, so when we talk about victimology, heck, I hate to even say the words out loud, but from an investigation standpoint, these are ideal victims. The nature of their lives, their work, and their lifestyles are far more punch clock and regimental than the regular old civilian life.
Well, isn't they did some studies, people that take the same route every day, people that to have the same schedule every day, have a higher percentage of a chance of being murder victims.
Well, and here what you have is a situation where you know the comings and goings of these two for a large part of their day, and for the most part, a large part of their week.
Right.
A lot of us have jobs. Maybe you're a salaried employee and you don't punch a clock. You don't have to, you know, report to the boss or report to he or she, whomever, that you're not checking in all the time. No, this is the Navy. They're pretty much checking everything. There's checks and balances. You're arriving at base, you're clocking in, they know where you live. So there's a lot of paper trail here and a lot of evidence that's going to shrink not only your timeline, but you shouldn't have a whole lot of blanks on those timelines, which is something that we see in a lot of cases. So
yeah, but this is the reason why I only work a job for 2 weeks, then I quit, start a new job, because then my schedule is always changing.
Well, to speak in specifics here, let's take the Pamela Kimbrough case, for example. She was working on base when she was attacked. There's no doubt about that. So she was working on base. She's attacked there and later found there in her car submerged in the base's waters. Meaning, while it's not an absolute, it's a damned near certainty that Pamela Kimbrough's killer had access to the naval base. There was solid evidence of a sexual assault. So that can only mean one thing, Captain. We are most certainly looking for a sailor, a Navy man.
Okay, Captain, dumb question of the episode. What percentage of the people on base are connected to the Navy, and do they have a small percentage of employees that are technically, or maybe not employees, but people that are visiting the base? Is it a situation where you should only be on the base if you're in the Navy, or is there a possibility that there's regular civilians that could be on the base?
That is a great question. So this is one of the largest, if not the largest, Navy base in the United States. I hesitate to say that, but I do know for certain that it's one of the largest. This is a huge area, a lot of people, and then it's also surrounded by other military and armed forces outfits as well. So while I don't know the percentages that you asked about, and I don't think that that's a bad question at all, one thing I will say here is, without having numbers in front of me, in the early 80s, I would guess the male to female ratio for persons at this Navy base would be significantly high for the males. Significantly high. When we talk about a Navy man, and then let's take it a step further, given the location where Pamela Kimbrough was attacked on base, that means that man, our killer, that poor excuse for a man,
shitbag,
forget about an honorable sailor, that man not only had access to the Navy base, but likely had clearance to where she was attacked, clearance to that specific area. Right? You have different ranks and you have different job duties on this base. And while I might be a sailor and I might have an assignment there, my assignment may not allow me to travel to every portion, to every nook and cranny of that base.
Well, let me just say something, and everybody just sit back in your chair, relax, and put your tin hat on for a second. I thought it was funny when you said, hey, the Navy's going to look into this. My first thought was, yeah, you're goddamn right they're going to look into this, because there's a chance that it is one of the higher ups. Like you said, they have access to areas that others would not have. Makes you wonder, was their intent to look into this to solve this crime, or was it to figure out what happened so they could deal with it internally?
That's something you always have to consider, but let's think of...
I know that's a little tin hat for everybody, but...
Yeah, but let's think of NIS as a little more internal affairs, right? It's its own... It's very much its own department.
Okay, so what you're saying...
And likely they may not care. They may not have anybody to protect.
Right. So what you're saying is actually their job, their sole job, they don't go after civilians. Their job is just to correct the system which they're a part of, but their job is to make sure that they catch the dirtbags.
Yes. And the other thing I want to make clear here too, something that you had referenced earlier, I don't want to suggest that the area that she was attacked at required some kind of higher clearance, that it was like,
right,
that you have to be a high ranking officer to get into that location. What I simply mean here is when you're running any secured facility, and when I worked in security for years, you have access and grant access to different people to different locations, where you may have person A who is a high ranking official at that facility or that location, but they have no reason to need access to something that maybe a janitor or maintenance person may need access to.
Right.
You limit where persons can travel. That's the way that you keep structure and you keep rule and you keep people safe by doing that. So what I'm suggesting here is that my first course of action, if I'm NIS, and I'm sure that this is where they went with this, if this is an area where, one, you have to have access to the base itself, okay, that right. doesn't really help you when that still includes thousands and thousands of people because it's such a large naval base. But with inside of that base, so what you're doing is you're eliminating and you're shrinking your suspect pool. While when we talk about a case, a homicide in a city where there's a million people, well, right then and there, including the victim's mother, everybody's a suspect in that city, all 1 million of them.
Suspect.
Here in this situation, because of where the attack took place and where the body was found, you can immediately go, okay, it had to be somebody that had access to this base. And that doesn't include every person that lived in the city of Norfolk.
Right.
Now, if this, you could shrink it even further if this is a location that only certain personnel had access to with inside of that base, if that makes sense.
No, I think it totally makes sense. But hear me out on this. If it's a common place, if it's a common area that a lot of people go to and you might not have access, but you could get access from somebody else, if that makes any sense.
Well, it can, and it could, but I don't think that that's what we're... I'm not saying most of this without having any knowledge of what's going on here. So let's go jump to another report. This is an additional report specifically about the investigation in Pamela and Kimbrough's murder case. So this report states that the last trip of Navy messenger Pamela and Kimbrough through the Naval Air Station has been traced dozens of times. So what they've done here is they already know the last time that she arrived on base and she had to check in. She's not just showing up willy-nilly. She has to check in and be granted access to come on to the base. So now they are checking her last trip through the Naval Air Station because that's where everything is telling us the attack took place and where her body was found. They are saying investigators have interviewed 798 people seeking clues. They've even put one of them, a man who heard Miss Kimbrough's screams, under hypnosis, hoping that that would disclose an unremembered detail of her slaying. The report continues, they've tracked down 300 white Chevrolet Chevettes registered on base, a car her killer might have used. And they're sure that the killer knew the young sailor well and may have even tracked her on her last day of work. But weeks of work have produced only one solid clue. And that clue was a ski mask that the killer apparently left in the car where Miss Kimbrough's beaten and bound body was found in the back seat underwater. So to give a little bit of a description here, the way that this looks to me, Captain, is that she's attacked and then placed inside of her vehicle. When they find the vehicle submerged in water, she is bound, her hands behind her back. her body is bruised. So there was some kind of physical attack that took place prior to tying her up, and maybe even after tying her up and placing her in that vehicle. But an attempt to strangle her was made. On top of that, the killer wrapped the seatbelt around her in a way that would further restrict her movement.
Right.
I think that we're looking at a possibility of one of two things. Either the killer thought that he had completed the job and that she was dead when the vehicle was moved into the water.
Right.
Or these were further attempts to keep her in that vehicle, because as we already know and have discussed, the manner of death here, the cause of death actually was drowning in this situation. So she was unconscious in the backseat of that car, tied up, and not only couldn't get free, probably never attempted to get free because she was unconscious.
Yeah, my guess is that the killer already thought she was dead.
Yeah, they find the ski mask inside the vehicle, and they're like, oh, either the killer thought we would never find this car and put it in the car willingly, or likely what they believe is left it there on accident or dropped it in the process of putting her in the vehicle and then putting the vehicle in the water.
Now, I'm guessing that the ski mask being submerged in water, it was submerged in water, right?
The whole car was, yes.
Right. So that's probably going to really screw up some DNA evidence.
Also found in the car, we have her purse. She was clothed, according to the Naval Investigative Service member. His name is Charles Lanyon, who was giving this report.
Do you think, because both of these victims were found with their clothes on, but there was evidence of a sexual assault, do you believe that the clothes were put back on to maybe hide the fact that they were sexually assaulted?
You want me to be brutally honest?
Yeah.
I think that that's a fib. I think that the victims were either found partially clothed, and they're choosing to leave out the word partially. And right. I'm saying that based off of what we know about the attacks, like you said, the sexual assault.
Right.
I think that this is a way to honor your fellow soldier or sailor, and that this is a detail that's not necessary for the newspapers or for the general public. My guess is that they're probably both found partially clothed or not a lot of clothing at all. And as said, that it's right. The other thing too, if you don't announce that there was a rape involved in your reporting to the newspapers, that also could be considered holdback information for your investigation.
Which would make sense.
Yeah, that only someone with intimate knowledge about the crimes would be aware of, that either you're talking to either the killer themselves or somebody that the killer talked to and told the details of the crimes. So if you hold back that information, when you got somebody sitting across from you, if they know that a rape took place and you've never announced that to anybody anywhere, then you know you're talking to somebody of significance and of importance to your investigation. NIS agents have traced the victim's movements from her off-base apartment that foggy March 25th morning through the gate of the base to the communication center where she picked up the morning messages for her command. Her watery grave was less than 100 yards from where she was last seen alive. They had 15 NIS agents working full-time on Pamela Kimbrough's case early on in the investigation.
The report also mentioned something about hypnosis.
That's correct. And the reason being, investigators are saying that they chose to use hypnosis in this case, but they were hoping to trace in detail what that witness heard and saw in the base parking lot that night. So this individual, he's out there and he hears a scream and he goes looking for where that scream came from and why there was a scream to begin with.
Right.
And they're worried that in his haste and maybe panic when he's out there in the dark, that maybe he's not recalling everything later when he's talking to investigators. So he says, yes, I'll do that. Put me under hypnosis and maybe I can recall something that I'm unable to tell you here in these conversations.
I wonder if they gave this eyewitness a polygraph test as well.
They go on to say that they believe that the attack on Miss Kimbrough may have been interrupted when flashlight carrying sailors, and this is something you had asked about earlier, and civilian defense workers combed the lot on foot and in cars. So they thought that the scream initially was that of someone who had accidentally driven over a seawall.
Right.
You know, it's dark at night, that this was something that was an accident. And so this is telling me, Captain, it's easy to put together how this looks. People were out there, they're working. This is a large base. You got a lot of people there. Somebody hears a scream. People go looking for what that scream was, where it came from, and why it even happened to begin with. I think these sailors and the civilian defense workers, keep in mind, those civilian defense workers had to have clearance to get onto the base too.
Yeah.
So that these persons are vetted. They know who they are, even though they're still civilians. These people go looking for it. I think that they are arriving to the scene and seeing evidence of the car going into the water, because I think it's no coincidence that they are finding and recovering her car and her body so quickly.
I'm going to say this. You might think I'm crazy, but with so many people looking and out in that parking lot, the killer could have slipped right back in and just acted like he was looking to see what happened too.
Exactly. Especially if he is, and why wouldn't we expect him to be?
He'd be close by, right?
Well, not only he should either be a sailor or a civilian defense worker.
Right.
So he's likely outfitted, uniformed, similar to the other persons in the area at the time that are searching.
What a scumbag.
He would slip right back in.
Yeah.
He would blend in immediately if he could behave in a natural way, if he was capable of doing so. Her body was found in her car by Navy divers 120 feet beyond a seaplane ramp. So this ramp is 100 yards from the communications center. That's where she was working. She had been beaten about the head. Her hands were tied behind her back with clothesline. She had been dumped in the back seat of her car while still alive. They were able to determine that. Her attacker turned on the ignition, put the car in gear, and sent it down the seaplane ramp into 10 feet of water, investigators say. The attacker, this is what we were talking about earlier so much, and this is from their report, the NIS report. The attacker would have had to be someone who had access to the base, either a military man or a civilian defense worker at that time of night at 4 a.m. So that's interesting too. That specific detail. Remember what I talked about? You could be a high ranking official at a location and maybe not have access to every corner, every corridor of that location, of that facility. What they're saying here is not just would this have to be a military man or a civilian defense worker that had access to the base. They would have had to have been somebody that would have had access to the base at that time frame, at that time of day.
Yeah, because if your schedule was to be there from 9 to 5, you have no reason. You have to have a pretty damn excuse on why you're there at 4 a.m.
Well, and keep in mind, though, this is a base. It's not about having an excuse. It's about being allowed on the base.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, that's predetermined. So they go on to state here that the gate guards are their sole purpose. The entirety of their job is stopping every vehicle and person and seeing their identification before anybody is allowed to go anywhere. They have to be on a list. They have to have clearance and access to that base.
Yeah, and I would assume that is pretty difficult to sneak back on the base.
Yeah, and the job duties too are going to be pretty well laid out, and anybody that's had a job that has to follow a certain schedule knows that that's going to break things down even better for investigators. So when she was killed, she was in the process of picking up the morning messages. These are reported to be routine correspondence from ships, aircraft, and other bases. So they know not just where she was and at what time she was attacked, but also what task she was carrying out when she was attacked. Join us back here in the garage, and until then, you better be good, be kind, and don't litter.